back, one and all, to a new show, a new week. I'm John Derola. We have resumed the natural order of things. Fantastic Mondays are here once again. Francesca Fiorentini, how was your weekend?
Oh, I was just busy, lots of work, you know. I somehow decided to do a show on a Sunday, so.
That's a decision you made and you've stuck with it, against all reason.
Yes. No, 100%. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that offline another time.
Yeah, she is so committed to destroying the very concept of the weekend that she refuses to take a day off.
Anyway. I don't like his music, I don't like anything about him.
Nope, not a fan. The blood weirds me out. Anyway, hello everyone and welcome back to the show. A full week here at the Damage Report, a full show at the Damage Report, because we have got a ton to talk about today. Not only some new legal pressure on members of the Trump family and a massive anti-vax rally with some absolutely insane things being said, but we've got impending Supreme Court action, and we also have, there's chaos in the universe. We also have a fairly supersized meanwhile in. So we're gonna be giving you news updates from around the world on things like, what do we got? We got legal developments for Julian Assange, cryptocurrency having a hell of a week, and a little inside look into a mansion that supposedly cost $1.3 billion to build. Who owns it? No, it's not Elon Musk, actually. Although oddly enough, he could build hundreds of those. Isn't it a weird world we live in? Anyway, with that said, everyone, hit the like button, share the stream. We got a lot we're gonna be talking about. Are you ready to jump into it, Francesca?
Yes, but I have a quick announcement to make.
What is that?
Can I plug something before we start?
I have never allowed you to, and I don't intend to start now. Okay, what's the plug?
I'm gonna be in New York. I'm gonna be in Brooklyn on March 10th, on Thursday, March 10th. You guys come and see the Bituation Room live, which is my podcast. And also John Iderola is gonna be on the show on Sunday. So you have to watch on Sunday. But I'll be in at the Bell House. You guys can get tickets there. Get tickets in my bio. And this is really quick because we've got news, but I've got news too.
We do, but that's important news too. Very exciting. Everyone go check that out. And also check out this, which I like to call the news. Some members of Donald Trump's family, including Ivanka herself, are now under increased legal threat coming from multiple directions simultaneously. And Donald Trump is not a big fan of that. So let's start off with the January 6th Commission, which sent a letter to Ivanka Trump requesting her, in their words, voluntary cooperation about, quote, a wide range of critical topics related to the Capitol riot. The letter said the lawmakers want to discuss conversations she witnessed or participated in relating to the president's plan to obstruct or impede the counting of electoral votes. So it is not difficult to figure out what it is that they're referring to there. We know earlier this month, the committee's vice chair, Representative Liz Cheney, told ABC News that the committee, quote, had firsthand testimony that his daughter Ivanka went in at least twice to ask Trump to please stop the violence. Live on the 6th, he's watching it, he's eating popcorn, he's laughing at all the worst moments. She tried to stop it, supposedly. On the day of the riot, she released a statement saying, the violence must stop immediately, please be peaceful. And so, is that true? Did that actually happen? What did he say in response? What were other people in the room saying? She knows. And because they asked for her voluntary cooperation, I am sure that that will be forthcoming, Francesca.
I guess I think the craziest part about all of this to me, and the fact that someone like Ivanka would release a statement, and that we know that people like Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and other folks at Fox News were furiously texting Mark Meadows on the day and like, oh, you gotta stop this, you gotta call it off. Like, buddies, didn't you know this was going to happen? I guess you were on the outs of this because a lot of people knew it was going down, including sitting Congress people knew it was going down. Everyone in the White House knew it was going down. So it seems like their attempts to like quell the violence were like, you know, in earnest, like that they didn't think it would get this bad. It's like, yeah, it was supposed to get this bad.
Yeah, the idea, well, it was supposed to get as bad as was necessary for their fever dream to come true, basically. Well, they're not gonna get her voluntary cooperation. That's a bold prediction coming from me. But even before we know what she will end up saying, Donald Trump is not happy about this. Not happy that they are trying to talk to members of his family. He said in response to this, they're using whatever powers they have. They couldn't care less. They're vicious people. It's a very unfair situation for my children. Very, very unfair. It's a disgrace what's going on. They're using these things to try and get people's minds off how incompetently our country is being run. And they don't care. They'll go after children. As HuffPost very helpfully makes clear, Ivanka Trump is not actually a child. She is in fact a 40-year-old adult woman with children of her own. And I you know, it's almost endearing. He still sees them as children, despite the fact that she was a White House aide, apparently with at least some level of security clearance. His other adult failed children run his business insofar as it is a business. So at some point, I think, yeah, they can try to talk to them. If you don't want them, if you don't want children to be involved, why did you involve them in your business and the presidency?
Yeah, they I mean, it's an interesting angle, like well played. You're sort of you know, whispering to the Q people when you just mention children. You know, save the children. The poor actual Save the Children Foundation is like, God damn it, what are we changing our name to? But then also like, oh, going after family. Republicans love to talk about how dare you bring my family into this. Like, you brought your family into this. They were your White House staff, as you mentioned. So they're pretty much in. In fact, you brought them into all of your financial crimes as well with the Trump Organization. So, you know, I mean, look, rich people bring their kids into their financial crimes. This is like, you know, what working class people when they like run out their kids' credit or something like that. You know, it's the same thing, but on a giant level, and probably will never be held accountable for.
At the very least, look, you're right to point out the hypocrisy that he involved his children, but at least he's never made it personal about other people's children. You would have to look very hard to find an instance of Donald Trump doing that. Well, not look, you'd have to hunt really hard. You'd have to hunter really hard to find an instance where he brought up someone else's children, you know, like in press conferences, in rallies, on the debate stage live. You'd have to hunter very hard to identify that. I don't think you would, honestly. Mm-mm. Anyway, if this entire situation doesn't feel succession-y enough, it's about to get succession-ier. Because Donald Trump's former lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, claimed that Trump said at one point that if one of his kids had to go to prison over the family business, to make sure it was Don Jr., not Ivanka. That is, no, spoiler alerts, that's a scene from the show. But anyway, he said specifically, and Donald said it to me. I mean, I wouldn't say it if it wasn't said directly to me. He goes, if one of the other has to go to prison, make sure that it's Don, because Don would be able to handle it. And what do you think?
You know, Eric is there. You know, it's like neither Don nor Ivanka and Eric's there. Like, Dad, just so you know, I am willing to go to prison for however long. I mean, honestly, 40 years, let's do it. Like, that's how much I love you. And I'll assume I'll get promoted, but eventually it doesn't even matter. Like, decades I'll go. Big Tom energy.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I doubt that that's happening. And could he handle it better? I mean, I don't think Ivanka would do very well in a real prison, but neither would Don Jr. And let's keep it real. They're never going to literally any prison. So again, while these updates can be fun and interesting, and I'm glad that committees are doing the work they're supposed to do, nothing will ever happen because America is a failed state. But even if they were to go to prison, they're not going to serious prison. They're going to a prison that will have nicer amenities than literally any vacation I have ever gone on or will ever go on. I feel very confident in that.
Oh, anyway. I think Don Jr. would like it. He'd be like, oh, thank God, pressure is off. I've got all these cameos to fulfill. I'm doing all these recordings for $50 a pop.
Oh, God.
Take my phone away from me, please.
Come on, Don Jr. Even Rudy gets 400. But anyway, yeah, he might depend. How he'll do is going to really come down to how accessible white powder is in that particular prison. Anyway, now. Those past quotes by Michael Cohen might make it seem as if Trump is willing to throw Don Jr. overboard, but he does at least seem to have this affection for Ivanka. Various forms of affection, some of them appropriate, others not so much. But it turns out, at least according to Michael Cohen, and bear in mind, whenever we give you quotes from Michael Cohen, remember that he's an awful person who worked for awful people. And there's literally no reason to believe a word that he says. He says he believes there is, quote, not a chance that the former president would offer to cooperate with investigators to shield even his daughter from her legal troubles. And I so mean, apparently ready, what? You know.
Michael Cohen did jump ship though. Like, I understand that like most people who've worked in Trump's inner circle have like, we should not believe a single word they say. But if there's one person, now granted, I'm not gonna buy his book, but if there's one person, it's the guy who's got nothing left to lose, which is Michael Cohen, who's already serving a 3-year federal prison sentence for the admission of the crimes that he did for Donald Trump. Trump should be the one serving that time, but he's not. So it's like, when you got someone who's got nothing left to lose, I'm like, yeah, listen to that guy, the fixer, Trump's fixer for decades. Yeah, listen to that guy. So if he says nothing's gonna happen, then John, I think our suspicions are correct.
Yeah, I think so. But by the way, as I alluded to at the beginning, the January 6th commission, them wanting to talk to Ivanka and other members of the family, that is but one aspect of the, in the end, likely ineffectual attempt to have some sort of consequences for the Trumps. Additionally, New York AG Letitia James has said that her investigations into the Trump Organization has uncovered significant evidence of fraudulent and misleading asset valuations. That's a story we talked about last week on the show. James has taken legal action to enforce subpoenas issued to Donald Trump and his children, Don Jr. and Ivanka, who she says were quote closely involved in the transactions in question, which theoretically at least seems like, well, that's a little bit more likely to result in some sort of legal action. A lot of the stuff has got to be documented. She seems very confident about it. This isn't just conversations. This is demonstrable financial crimes. But again, it's America. So what do we think is going to come of that?
Will any of this prevent him from being able to run again? That's really all I want to know. Nothing. I don't even need prison time. I just want to know, can he still run for president?
Look, just everyone, he's going to be president again. Like, you know, because you think, so I'll say, well, why is he going to be president again? Well, because we live in the worst timeline. No, John, we don't live in the worst timeline. He lost in his reelection bid. There's reasons for hope. Sure, I like the idea of that. But what you don't understand is that in the worst timeline, he doesn't get elected and then get elected again. Sure, that sounds bad, but doesn't it sound worse to have a 4-year respite and then he gets elected again? And we'll see, we'll see. But have you noticed what Biden's up to? I looked for something optimistic or policy focused having to do with the Biden administration to cover today. Not seeing a lot. I think she just committed suicide, I'm not sure.
I've been doing anyway. That. I've done it, like, I think I've committed suicide four times now.
I apologize. Well, let's go to lighter news, ridiculous news. Donald Trump is a massive power broker on the right. That's what they say, and at least in some cases, when there are contested primaries on the right, the candidates do sure seem to want his support, and especially his endorsement. But that endorsement might be about to become a little bit less valuable. And not because of anything having to do with the right's attachment to Donald Trump. They still worship him as their living God Emperor. No, it's that he is planning to change how he does the endorsements, specifically how many candidates he endorses in the same race. He's floated the idea of doling out dual endorsements in some of the key midterm races as he becomes increasingly suspicious of his advisors who are pushing competing candidates. One person close to Trump says he feels like he's being penned in, explaining that Trump's, in the AIDS word, logic is that dual endorsements would mean I get two chances to win. Well, I guess that's true, but like I could put bets on both sides of a boxing match. I get two chances to win, but also two chances to lose. I don't know. What do you think of this idea?
Him just picking like all the primary candidates? Yeah.
Or I guess the top two, I suppose.
I mean, you know, it's a great way to just not have like a negative campaign. Nobody likes that, you know? So they'll just sort of compete and they'll work together. No, it makes no sense. I think that, and I don't think any politician, especially a Republican, will go for that. I think the angle, if they don't get endorsed, is maybe to, I mean, who knows? We're already seeing Ron DeSantis sort of ruffle a little bit of MAGA feathers when it comes to whether he's vaccinated or admits he's vaccinated or not. He's sort of like, there's a little detente happening. So I'm curious to see how people position themselves. I mean, especially when we saw what happened in 2020, you know, like the endorsement means nothing, especially when your candidate is crap. And then you see the Youngkin model, which is, I'm gonna run on something like critical race theory. I'm not gonna accept Trump's open endorsement, kind of like Trump didn't accept David Duke's open endorsement, but I'm totally gonna use the white nationalist movement slash the MAGA movement. So I almost think it's a, obviously Trump's always had the Midas touch, you know, everything turns to doo-doo, so.
Yeah, 100%. And look, he's had some endorsements that have worked out. It's not the hardest thing to do if you endorse the person that's leading by a ton. And by the way, it's also not difficult to make an endorsement based purely on who's leading when literally none of the candidates have any substance whatsoever and are only competing with each other during the primary season to be most deferential to Donald Trump himself. That is pretty easy. Donald Trump's found a way to make it even easier. Just endorse a whole bunch of them and you'll always win. And while we, I think, this is insane and it goes against the very idea of making an endorsement, and you watching at home might say that this is laughable. You think his base is gonna think that? You think they're gonna see this for the cowardly, like smooth brained move that it is? No, they'll be perfectly fine with it. By the way, really fast little spicy bit, because you mentioned Ron DeSantis. So him not being willing to admit that he is boosted or not before was obviously a massive weenie move when he just sort of refused to answer the questions or was really vague in response. In the meantime, he has of course been attacked by Donald Trump, although also in a weenie move of Trump's own, not by name, for doing that. Ron DeSantis just a few days ago again refused to answer, in this case though saying, well, I don't wanna say that because it could be used as a weapon against me. Yes, that's true, but pointing out specifically why you're being a weenie doesn't make you less of one. It just means that you're fully aware of it. You could have written off the first comment saying, I thought I answered it or I wasn't sure. No, he's specifically saying, I refuse to be brave here in case someone attacks me. And that, like, from old school, the old school political point of view, I think makes some sense. But now, when you're going up against Donald Trump, that sort of obvious weeniehood just isn't gonna sell. How is this guy ever gonna beat Trump in an open, dirty, Trumpian fight when he can't even navigate a situation as simple as that? Here's the easy answer, just say you didn't. Whether you did or not, just lie. They don't care and they don't want you to be vaccinated.
Or say you did and stand up for yourself the same way that Ted Cruz said that what happened on January 6th. But this is the thing about alpha males, right? Well, when you believe in a world of alpha males, what happens? Oh, you got one alpha male and everyone else is just a beta. Everyone else just goes along. Also sounds like authoritarianism. If there is, if you do believe in alpha dumb, then what does that even mean? Everyone's just deferential to Trump. So effectively, you guys are all just loser weenies that can't stand up for the things that you've already done. You already got boosted. You were saving lives, but no. I mean, and this is the point. People would rather die than get vaccinated because of Trump, right? Because of the children and the Bill Gates and the microchips and the, I don't know what else, the Faucis.
Yep. Yeah, been true for a while. So really fast, I just want to let you know about a couple of races where this is possible that this could happen. So in Ohio, tech billionaire Peter Thiel has been lobbying Trump to pick JD Vance for Senate, while Kellyanne Conway has been telling him that Bernie Marino's the one that he should back. Neither candidate is a clear front runner, which presents a difficult choice. It's not clear who's gonna win. You've got advisors on both sides. I mean, I have like racked my brain to come up with a way to figure out who to endorse. But the only thing I could come up with is talking to the candidates and looking at their platform and choosing based on what they would do if they won. And that's not gonna happen. By the way, in Pennsylvania, Dina Powell, former White House aide, is pushing Trump to endorse her husband, David McCormick. Sean Hannity is urging him to back celebrity doctor Mehmet Oz. So this is all so like obviously biased and pointless is support from his aides. Yeah, just endorse them all, endorse everyone. In fact, endorse the Democrats too. Why not? Then you can't lose.
This is, I mean, the cartoonishness of the right is like Peter Thiel encouraging to J.D. Vance, Sean Hannity for Dr. Oz. What world do we live in, you guys? They're literally gonna put up Mr. Potato Head as a candidate. Yeah. Mr. Potato Head will be Veep.
We will be
Lieutenant Governor.
This is the Mad Libs cinematic universe. That is what it is.
It is. It is like pick proper noun. Mm-hmm. Celebrity once big in the 90s.
Yeah. We need a new SCOTUS judge. Who are we gonna pick? That Judge Reinhold, there's just something about him that seems right for the role. Anyway, okay, we're gonna take our first break, everyone. Read some of your comments. When we come back, Sarah Palin is in two simultaneous battles, one potentially for her life. We'll give you the details after this. Okay, with that said, let's jump into the news. Sarah Palin wants to battle the New York Times, but first she has to beat another assailant, the COVID. Because the trial for Sarah Palin's defamation lawsuit against the New York Times may be delayed after the former vice presidential candidate tested positive for COVID-19. That is according to the judge overseeing her case. So she is doing this trial in federal court in Manhattan. Jed Rakoff is the US district judge in charge of it, says that she had a positive test result. So now he may choose to start proceedings on February 3rd instead of today. And the way he announced it is just great. He says she is, of course, unvaccinated. Because, of course, she's unvaccinated. And hey, that makes her a true believer. I almost have more respect for that. Anyway, what is this trial about? Well, it goes way back to 2017. So she says that a 2017 New York Times editorial falsely linked her to a mass shooting in Tucson, Arizona. The editorial was published after a shooting in Alexandria, Virginia, in which Steve Scalise, a member of House Republican leadership, was wounded. And the Times said that the Tucson shooting, in which six people were killed and a Democratic Congresswoman, Gabby Giffords, was severely injured, came after Palin's Political Action Committee circulated a map putting 20 Democrats, including Giffords, under stylized crosshairs, and that the link to political incitement was clear. So this goes way back, Francesca. Yep. Do you actually remember the mini scandal about that Palin ad?
It was a huge scandal. Yeah, it wasn't a mini scandal, it was a huge scandal. And it was one of the first moments where we saw that the base that the right was cultivating was so off their, you know, stuff that they actually might have looked at that map, saw crosshairs, and were like, yeah, I got a gun, let's go. Mm-hmm. And we saw that. So it was kind of one of those moments that I think a lot of people who study, whether it's media or politics or anything, or just alive and care, can point to, okay, there is a direct consequence when you put out incendiary material like that. When you put a crosshair over someone and then you say, oh, I was just joking. Oh, that was just a political crosshair. So it's weird to me that Sarah Palin would almost dredge that up in 2017. Because it almost brings more shine and attention to what she did.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Look, I don't know. I feel like maybe we'll disagree on this. I think that in theory, in a different political time, coming from a different political person, representing a different political party, doing the crosshairs wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing. You're targeting the people, preferably not to be shot. But the issue is that this is America, where we take politics so seriously that many people are increasingly willing to literally murder or at least cheer the murdering of their political opponents. This is coming from a party that even before the more explicit turn to constantly invoking violence in connection with politics has made guns into their own religion. Like when you do that and you put out this message with the crosshairs to people that love guns more than literally life itself, then that becomes more of a problem. Anyway, we might disagree, but that maybe everybody thinks it's objectively a problem. Now, so what is she doing? What's behind this? She objected to language that James Bennett, the Times former editorial page editor, added to a draft that had been prepared by a colleague. She contends that the added material fitted Bennett's preconceived narrative and that as an experienced editor, he knew and understood the meaning of his words. She's seeking unspecified damages, but according to court papers, has estimated $421,000 in damage to her reputation.
Oh, come on.
Isn't it amazing? The estimate like rounds to the thousand. That's specific.
Yeah, it's not 4:30, but 4:21 would definitely like, that's my mortgage, that's my like food costs. No, this is what I'm saying though. It is clearly a ploy just to get some money. This has been a thing. People have written op-eds about that exact political action committee's release of that map. So to finally go after somebody now for that, she just needs the money. That's why she's doing all these appearances on cable where she like literally has no idea what's going on. She's completely out to lunch. But also the other thing about it, let's say it's not about the money. It also shows the fragility when you sue for defamation, not always, especially people in power suing for defamation. It often reveals that they actually did something. I'm thinking of Alan Dershowitz suing one of the victims of Jeffrey Epstein, who accused him of actually assault and of sleeping with him. So, and he's like, I did not, I'm going to sue you. It's like, buddy.
Yeah.
This bring way more attention on you than you really want. And I feel like the same goes for this.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I would also say, look, I'm obviously not a lawyer. There are other people you can turn to on YouTube for that, I guess. But anyway, when you ask for $421,000 in damage to your reputation, like we talk about things like property damage. Something happens to property, you estimate how much damage. Isn't there some element of how valuable the thing was before that should be taken into account? Because this is her reputation we're talking about. Was there that much room to really damage it by 2017? I mean, the best thing that's happened to her since then is that she was on The Masked Singer. She chose that. Did that not do damage to her reputation? Anyway, we'll leave it up to the justices. Supposedly, there is not much expectation that they will, that the judge will side with her. But there is this growing appetite on the right to make it easier to claim defamation, which they think is going to be great for them. And maybe for some it will if they make that change. But they also very, very frequently lob evidence-free claims against individuals and corporations at the heart of whatever conspiracy theory they came up with on the internet that week. Isn't that gonna also open them up to more lawsuits? Yeah. They should be careful.
Hello, Alex Jones. Opening.
Exactly. Anyway, with that, let's mix things up in a whole bunch of different ways. Prepare yourself. Let's jump into this video.
What we're seeing today is what I call turnkey totalitarianism. They are putting in place all of these technological mechanisms for control we've never seen before. It's been the ambition of every totalitarian state from the beginning of mankind to control every aspect of behavior, of conduct, of thought, and to obliterate dissent. None of them have been able to do it. They didn't have the technological capacity. Even in Hitler Germany, you could cross the Alps into Switzerland. You can hide in an attic like Anne Frank did.
Whew, that was RFK Jr. speaking at a rally that we'll give you more details for. I just want to respond a little bit to the comparison between those being asked to get vaccinated or test. They always leave that part off with Anne Frank in case, you know, it was a long time ago. Maybe they don't teach that anymore. Something critical race theory. Maybe they don't teach anything about history anymore. Anne Frank, her mother Edith, her father Otto, and older sister Margot lived with four other Jews to hide from the Nazis in a cramped attic annex above the Amsterdam factory where her father had worked, until they were discovered, arrested, and sent to concentration camps. Multiple women who survived that concentration camp and remember Anne from that time described her in those last tragic weeks of her life as weak and emaciated, her head shaved, delirious, terrible, burning up from fever. Only Otto of the immediate family survived. So there are some differences between that example and the anti-vaxxers. Auschwitz Memorial agreed, saying exploiting the tragedy of people who suffered, were humiliated, tortured, and murdered by the totalitarian regime of Nazi Germany, including children like Anne Frank, in a debate about vaccines and limitations during global pandemic is a sad symptom of moral and intellectual decay. But hardly the only confirmation of that decay that we need if you're paying attention to the news every day. But what was that all about? Well, RFK Jr. was speaking at a anti-vaccine, anti-mandate demonstration that descended this weekend on a Washington. Those people were mostly maskless with some sporting far right and pro-Trump memorabilia, shockingly. Rally organizers predicted about 20,000 people would attend the event. The Washington Post estimated a few thousand had gathered by Sunday afternoon. Despite, by the way, the 1-2 punch of weeks of hype on Steve Bannon's podcast, as well as guests like RFK Jr. and Laura Logan, she is still alive. She just isn't allowed on Fox News anymore. What do you think, Francesca?
I mean, again, it's this oppression fantasy that the right has. They really think it's their time. You know, they think whether it's through the vaccine, whether it's their so-called decline of the white race, right? This is all about them being the real oppressed people, and they're willing to even steal the memory of the Holocaust, right? Or steal the legacy of the civil rights movement in order to justify and make a comparison, a crass, disgusting comparison between what is happening now. I'm sorry, what is happening now? Who are you? Are you being hauled? Are you hiding in attics? Are you being hauled away on trains? And this is, again, it is in their mind. It is the imagination, the fantasy of what they think could, maybe, probably won't one day happen, sort of in my dream that I had as I was trying to fall asleep, but I was too hot, you know, so I like took off the covers, but I saw it in my mind's eye. And it's obviously disgusting. And you look, it wasn't just this guy talking about the comparison. You saw people holding, right, like sort of Stars of David, you know, and as they think themselves to be the marked people, the people who are shunned, the people who there will be a Holocaust. Guess what? Almost 900,000 people have died of COVID, and a lot of them are unvaccinated. And I've said this on this show before, but let's say it again. You guys are not an oppressed class. You are an elite class. Why? Because when unvaccinated people get sick, they are still being treated and cared for in hospitals. Everything is being done to keep them alive, to serve them. And we're staying home. People are refraining from going out and living their lives. Why? Because we want to stop the spread of the virus, to largely stop also the unvaccinated. All, to be honest with you, I'm more thinking about my mom. I'm thinking about older people. I'm thinking about immunocompromised people, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you guys are the ones. You're elite. You're elite. Yeah. And like, oh, I can't even. There's so much.
So elite that, you know, other people who need help can't get beds in hospitals. People who need things that might not be immediately life threatening, but would very much like to have access to the healthcare system. Sorry, you're gonna have to wait a few months, maybe a year, because these people really, really don't want to take medicine. Basically, that is a very elite position that you have, and you're totally right. These are the same people that love to talk about other groups engaging in the oppression Olympics. They are desperately searching for some way to feel like a victim. And RFK Jr. Wasn't the only one. There were a number of fairly deranged guests at the vaccine rally that happened this weekend. Let's go to Del Bigtree, CEO of anti-vax group Informed Consent Action Network.
Mark my words, we will hold Tony Fauci accountable. We will hold Deborah Birx accountable. We will hold Joe Biden accountable. But unlike the Nuremberg trials that only tried those doctors that destroyed the lives of human beings, we are going to come after the press that lied to the world, that worked as a propaganda machine to push the...
So they're the victims in this constant Holocaust comparison that they'd like to make, as he is literally saying, we're gonna hunt down the press as well as the doctors. I think you should read some books about the metaphor that you're making there. Anyway, it wasn't just him. You also had Robert Malone, the anti-vaccine doctor from Joe Rogan's podcast. He opened his speech in front of the Lincoln Memorial by invoking Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech, adding that anti-vax marchers in DC today are, quote, standing on the shoulders of giants. Sort of. I mean, you're kind of standing on a needless mountain of American dead from the pandemic that didn't need to die. But thank you for your contributions to that human suffering. You also had regular people, of course. John Koppel, a staunch advocate against COVID-19 vaccines and an InfoWars loyalist, told the Daily Beast ahead of the rally he's a fan of Alex Jones. Well, wouldn't you have to be a loyalist to InfoWars? Anyway, he carried a sign that promoted Jones' media entity and claimed that Dr. Fauci is a mass murderer. He said he remains upset with former President Donald Trump's initial push of what he calls the bioweapon. The rally goer added that Trump's endorsement of the vaccine is a serious issue. We are for medical freedom, he continued, before suggesting that Trump might have been corrupted. So we've seen this little dance where they love Trump. They really love Trump, but he'll encourage them to take this a little bit seriously, maybe get vaccinated, and they boo him. If they're put to a test, some of them, perhaps an increasing number, they know which they would choose. They like this new identity they have more than the Trump stuff, perhaps because of the rhetoric is even more deranged, even more apocalyptic, the conspiracy theory more pure and undiluted than Donald Trump's rambling diatribes.
Absolutely. And I think you're going to see, look, that was the who's who of anti-vax influencers who have been doing this grift for decades. And the pandemic and the vaccine rollout was a perfect trifecta, plus MAGA folks, for a lot of these influencers and wellness gurus and people who just sell you more snake oil. But maybe they do it from like an alternative medicine position, or from like a family base, or like, I am a sovereign autonomous being, right? Like what is called conspirituality, which, by the way, everyone should listen to that podcast. It's amazing. That there are going to be more and more of these people, not just out in front, they're going to run for office, y'all. And so I think it is important. What can we do? It's very scary. For me, it comes down to public health and Medicare for all. The more easily accessible your doctor is to you, your healthcare plans are to you, the more affordable, the more clinics there are, the more we can dispel and turn to places like YouTube, which should not be places where you get your information. You should not be turning to the Joe Rogan podcast to tell you the truth, right? But that's sort of what we have sown in this country, and we're reaping it, and it is scary. But like, please try and pull your friends away from the brink of this, however you can, because a lot of people are getting sucked into the anti-vax world, and it's not just from the right, it's also from the so-called progressive left.
Yeah, or you're totally right, especially because that's where the money is. If you're gonna make, like, by the way, I've made what, 1,000 videos cautioning people about the pandemic and trying to get them to take it seriously. Let me tell you, it's not a big money maker, but pushing ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and conspiracy theories, massive money. You can get a nice house on that money, it turns out.
Or John, if you title your video Dr. Fauci, if you criticize Dr. Fauci in a headline, which he deserves some criticism, that'll get clicks. Anything.
Oh, totally. And just do that all day long. And sure, people won't know what's going on. They won't be ready to engage with the political system, but you will be wealthy. There's also regular, like, they would maybe describe themselves as centrist, but like longtime Democrats who are at this rally. Claire Tobin is a lifelong Democratic voter from Chicago. She voiced her frustrations with politicians pushing mandates and vaccines. I don't trust the vaccine. You can't even trust the Democrats either. They all have the same message. They all had the same agenda. Which, look, obviously them all having the same message on the pandemic doesn't seem true, but it might be a little bit harder for them to say it's all equal if one party got the presidency and then accomplished a lot of stuff. Joe Biden, that might help to differentiate the two. Mm-hmm. One attendee, to give you an idea of how rampant the conspiracy theories are, he said his name was Jason, told the Daily Beast the event might be a psyop due to the loud rap music being blared through speakers, which prohibited attendees from talking to each other. It's a disaster. No one can talk to each other. You realize this? There are always operations. They're incompetent. And so they put the audio up too loud. It's not the CIA necessarily. And of course, crazy signs, shoot those who try to kidnap and vaccinate your child, stuff like that. My producer says, what if he's a surgeon and he just got paged mid quote? Well, apparently he should probably go back to that, because people need the help. We need the doctors. Anyway, okay, everybody. We're gonna take one more break. We come back. SCOTUS ready to potentially remove another thing, one of the minimal government changes over the past few decades to make things a little bit more equal. We'll have details on that and more after this. Okay, the hour is rapidly burning up. Let's jump into our last two stories. I would prefer for her to do the intros too. I get it. The director's got a favorite. Can you guess who it is? What am I, Don Jr. and she's Ivanka? Give me a chance, Dad. I can do it. Anyway. By the way, Eric is nowhere in this. He's one of the heads of the Trump organization. Trump don't care. Anyway, neither is the January 6th commission. Anyway, okay, now it's May time and we're gonna talk about something. The Supreme Court has been on a tear, getting ready to tear up all of your constitutional rights having to do with reproductive rights and a number of other things. Well, they've got another issue area in their sights because the Supreme Court this week announced that they are going to take up and hear a challenge to the consideration of race in college admissions, so-called affirmative action. They are now coming for it. The court said it will take up lawsuits claiming that Harvard University, a private institution, and the University of North Carolina, a state school, discriminate against Asian American applicants. A decision against the schools could mean the end of affirmative action in college admissions. Lower courts have already rejected those challenges, citing more than 40 years of high court rulings that allow colleges and universities to consider race in admissions decisions. But that's just like precedent or something for like a half century. We didn't get a conservative supermajority in the SCOTUS to abide by precedent. And so Francesca, these right wingers, I'm gonna guess 98% of whom are white that are behind this, are very worried about discrimination against Asian American college applicants. What do you think?
I mean, this court is so radical that it basically plucks anything out of the lower courts that's already been decided a million times and elevates it so long as it seems to obliterate any kind of, I don't know, like democratic norms or rights of like anti-discrimination laws. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they pluck up like a property dispute between like Brett Kavanaugh's uncle and his neighbor about which side the pomegranate tree is on. And they're like, this needs to be in the Supreme Court. Yes. And I rule that that pomegranate tree is on Uncle Kavanaugh. Like that is what they're doing. Now there has been a long, I mean, I think it's a really interesting discussion, but really what they're doing is essentially allowing for affirmative action to go away, right? They want it gone and they want any kind of attempt to correct historical inequity and crimes of the past, i.e. legacies of slavery and Jim Crow in this country, inability to access higher education. They want that all gone because that's all critical race theory, that's all done. Right. And I think Asian Americans are a good sort of Trojan horse to basically say, well, see, they're people of color too. You know what I'm saying? And again, Asian Americans in America, in the United States, are often seen as this model minority. And there is a ton of racism within the Asian American community and with other communities against Black Americans. Again, a lot of this has to do with just bottom line anti-Blackness. So let's not 100% forget that.
Yeah, no, totally. And by the way, how might this go? Because just because they're talking about it doesn't mean that they're gonna overturn it. Well, the court's most recent pronouncement was back in 2016, a 4-3 decision upholding the admissions program at the University of Texas against a challenge brought by a white woman. But the composition of the court has changed since then. Two members of the 4-justice majority are gone from the court. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died in 2020. Anthony Kennedy retired 2 years prior. The 3 dissenters in the case remain on the court. And then there's other justices that have come since then, but I'm not sure which way they'll go. I don't know. So I will end with a poll. The fact that affirmative action might soon be gone, that your reproductive rights might be Thanos'd, is the Supreme Court something to consider on the Supreme on during elections or to not consider during elections? You got an A and a B. We'll give you the results after the next presidential election. Anyway, with that, we are very, very quick to running out of this hour. So perhaps we can jump to our last story. We're gonna start with this video.
No room to yell at us.
I wanna speak to the person who made this drink. Is that you?
No, well,
we don't know who made it, so.
You don't know who made it?
There's 4 of us here, so we honestly don't.
Stupid ignorant high school kids.
Okay, bye.
I wanna speak to
bye, okay, you can call corporate whenever you want, goodbye.
Jim, stop.
No, I don't care.
Give it to me right now.
What?
I'm calling the police. I'm calling the police.
I want the telephone.
Janice,
I want the telephone.
Get out. You can call corporate. Bye.
You're an idiot. immigrant loser.
What? Get the You're going to jail. You're going to jail, you racist piece of...
Bro, call the police now.
So that was obviously Male Karen at a Robex in Fairfield, which is actually right next door to Bridgeport, Connecticut, where I was born and raised. James Iannazzo was apparently so angry with the employees of a Robex that he yelled at them, threw stuff, shouted racial slurs, and then, yes, at the end of the video, tried to get into the employees only area, which is suspicious in any event at a Robex, but particularly after you're yelling and shouting racist stuff. I would have been terrified if I was one of those teenagers working at that Robex that this madman was going to attack. So I'll give you more details about what led to that, but I do want your reaction, Francesca.
I mean, Ida Rola, Iannazzo, I think there's some go get your boyness over here. Connecticut, John, call your boy. But
to be fair, I've never been arrested while at a Robex. I have been thrown out of a Robex and I am banned from several Papa John's. Or sorry, Papa's John, I think it would be called. But this is not the same thing. Calm it with the anti-Italian stuff.
Yeah. Okay. And that's fine. No, my first thought when I saw this is beyond his ridiculous behavior, because we've seen this so much lately, but it's about the workers, right? I just did a whole 2 hours on the great resignation on the Twitchuation Room, which is my TYT stream. But there are so many workers who are saying, enough, I don't get paid to deal with these customers and to be mistreated and to have drinks thrown at me, right? This is not even a minimum wage job. We can't even get the minimum wage raised. Meanwhile, my shifts are disappearing. I don't get sick time, whatever it is. No worker deserves to be treated that way, and it's on management to protect them. So yeah. I immediately just thought, man, I would quit.
Yeah, I would look working in these sorts of jobs. I'm sure you have. I've worked in 1,000 different areas of food service and retail and all that. It was never easy. And these things, by the way, are not totally new. What's new is high definition cameras being carried around by everyone. But they are worse. People do feel emboldened, I think. In this case, he says the reason, because he's now got a lawyer, he's been arrested and all that, is that he had gotten a smoothie, given it to his child. The child had had an allergic reaction. He believes that they put peanuts in it or something like that that caused it. I understand that would cause you to be very angry and very scared. I understand that. And I admit that Robex is a high tension area in the best of times. Everyone's hopped up on stimulants and stuff. But you don't get to try to attack them, especially verbally, in a racial way, and especially potentially physically. What were you gonna say to them in the employee only area that you couldn't say over the counter? Why did you need to try to bust down a door that a scared employee is desperately trying to keep shut? That is horrifying behavior. And the context about the health thing does not ameliorate it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know he's got a statement out, and he's, he works with Merrill Lynch, right? It doesn't matter what happened. The way that you treat someone, it says everything about your worldview too. If you're treating, we all know that the way that you treat working people, we've all been out to dinner with somebody who treats wait staff like crap. They're ridiculous. And it shows a lot about their worldview and how they believe workers should be in the service of them. And if they make any kind of mistake, well, then they deserve to have a smoothie thrown at them and be berated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Instead of, I'm sure if he was calmer about it, the whole situation would have been calmer.
Yeah, definitely. And then he might not have ended up getting arrested, and he might not have, to add just one little bit of extra news, what you said about the Merrill Lynch thing. He used to work at Merrill Lynch. He does not work there anymore, because apparently there is actually a line, even for organizations like that, not having to do with the financial stuff. But when it comes to Robux, they take that seriously. Anyway, okay, with that, we've still got a lot more planned. If you're on a linear platform, thank you for watching. We will see you tomorrow. But if you're on Twitch or on YouTube, the members app, those sorts of things, Francesca and I have got a lot to talk about still, including litterbox drama, as well as news from around the world in Meanwhile In. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.